Chapter 17. Lysander. Mars must fall.
"Where have all the shepherds gone?" I shout.
Atalantia turns with all the members of the iron block to stare at me. Ajax looks at the ground, already mourning me. I push my way through them, down to the floor. Diomedes has stopped halfway at the exit.
"The Diomedes I know does not run from a fight," I call. "If you gave up so easily in the field, Earth would still be in the Republic's hands. Stay, hear me speak."
"Why should I listen to anything you have to say?"
Diomedes calls back.
"Palatine serpent, all can see where you sit."
"Do you seek to aid Virginia?" I turn on his mother and the rest of their deputation before scouring the risers. "Gold in fighting with gold? Is that not how we arrived here? How Darrow shattered our hold on the spheres? Why the Docklands of Venus now rattle with civil strife? We allowed our enemy to divide us before. Bellona against Augustus, Rim against Cor. We are the victims of our own bickering. We're doing it all over again. Vox clamatis in deserto. Can none of you see it? This is how we fall."
"Loon boy, you do not have the floor,"
Lady Bellona calls to me, mocking.
"You like games, yes? Games have rules, so do we. Sit down, mind your manners."
"I invoke my right of interjection," I say. "It is my due as a direct descendant of a conqueror."
"At least you remember the archaic rules. You'll know that then you will need 30 members to validate your interjection."
"Forgive him, Julia," Atalantia calls. "Lysander found his way to a cup and lost his wits on the journey. His youthful passion is usually such a virtue, but this is his first summit. It's all so very exciting for him."
Many laugh at me, and not just the Irons. "Drown with laughter that which you cannot retort. How gauche," I reply. "Do I have 30 members?"
Horatia and her entire block raise their hands, as I asked her to arrange early in the morning.
"Princeps Sonatus, I have 30 members. I'll wait while you count."
I earn a few laughs. The Moonies are more than a little mystified by the theatrical style of our politics. Dido nods to Helios. They don't retake their seats, but they wait. Julia makes a show of counting and sighs as if it's out of her hands.
"He is right, Atalantia."
"Oh, fuck off," Atalantia mutters. "You fuck off.
On what grounds do you interject, young man?"
"On the grounds of conscience," I declare.
"Conscience?"
Atalantia laughs. So does her block, but the laughter is forced.
"There is precedent. First cited by Akari in 5 PCE, I say.
That one was for the Rim. A smile starts to grow on Dido's face. A student of history herself, Julia rolls her eyes again.
"Hilarious. Very well. The body recognizes your interjection. The pyramid is yours. Dictator, please return to your seat. You may continue your speech after the interjection is finished."
"No," Atalantia says. "It is my floor. The opportunity for discussion has passed. Go back to your seat, boy."
"Oh, Grimace, what am I holding?"
Lady Bellona wiggles her staff of office.
"You may be the dictator, but I remind you that the authority that makes you so is that of this body. The same authority that makes me the Princeps Sonatus, and the same authority by which you summoned young Loon with the Iron Fist and sent legions to Venus. You control the state fleet, the state armies. I control the Senate floor. It is important we remember our laws. They are meant to protect us from ourselves, after all. Did not Lysander honor the law in obeying your summons, at great inconvenience to himself, considering his games were only in their infancy? Should you not follow his precedent?
Julia is a menace when she cares to be. By law, she holds Imperium here, though no one really believes the Olympic Knights are her policemen today. Not all the Knights are Atalantia's creatures, but if it came to trouble, it's common consensus that Ajax counts as four. Still, if it comes to blades, I failed miserably. Gauging the mood of the 200, Atalantia surrenders the floor.
Has Jupiter, after all? Such a pity, she says, as she passes me and shakes her head at Ajax as if she tried her best with me.
Already she draws him closer again. When Atalantia settles in her seat, I let the silence stretch and fight back the thoughts of Glerastes. I was raised on the rhetoric of Cicero and Demosthenes, but it is Selenius I channel now. Humility first.
Why should you listen to me? I ask, and meet their eyes one by one.
Why indeed? Diomedes was not wrong to ask the question. I have not shared the horrors of these last years with you. I have not stood shoulder to shoulder with you to hold back the rising. I have heard it said that I am a traitor, that I renounced gold to lie with the wolves. I have been called a shadow of my predecessors, a Palatine buzzard returned for the easy spoils.
Catamite! Don't forget Catamite! An iron shouts.
Ajax turns on the man, and the man leans back as if suddenly seeing a tiger staring back at him from an otherwise pleasant glade. Atalantia's eyes twitch toward Ajax, calculating.
I laugh. Catamite as well. Why not? Words, like weapons and laughter, can be used to silence a voice. I heard a great silence here today. Seated in the shadow of our dictator, I felt that silence in myself. And I would remain sitting, trusting in our dictator, had my shame not been too much for my conscience to bear.
Since my return, I have sought to put the welfare of the society above all other concerns, including my own. I have asked neither for remuneration nor for the return of my personal properties. The ships, the legions, the bases, the reserves, I gladly give to the war effort. Instead, I have put myself in debt rebuilding the planet Mercury. I have used my name, such as it stands, not to win territory or glory, but to make peace where it can be made. I have urged conciliation between Rim and Kor, between Atalantia and Apollonius, between the loyal people of Mercury and those citizens lost enough to believe Darrow's noble lie. I seek that same object today. Peace and the welfare of our society.
When I was a child, I was asked by my sovereign what the society meant to me. I answered then as I would answer now. The society is a light in the darkness. My sovereign then asked me what gold means to me. Knowing my own opinion meant very little, I echoed the words of our greatest hero, Selenius the Lightbringer. I told her that we are those who tend the flame and shepherd the human flock. But the more I look around, I wonder, where have all the shepherds gone? In their place, I see only wolves and sheep.
Atalantia's lips twitch. Togas shuffle.
My august friends, it is my belief that in our war to combat the demons of our society, we have fallen prey to our own internal demons. We have been at war so long that we have forgotten not only the purpose of war, but our own purpose. Where once we measured our virtues by our sacrifices, by our civic accomplishments, by the expansion of habitability to even the coldest spheres, we now measure them in the quantity of enemy ships vanquished, in the quality of the names notched on our razors, in the gross tonnage of enemy equipment destroyed, and the length of the roads we pave with the bodies of dead rebels. I contend these are not measurements of virtue at all. Even less are they measurements of progress. They measure only our will. But our will for what? What? Did Selenius and Akari love war? Did they use war to line their own purses, to vent their rage against the ungrateful masses? Or did they wage war to sculpt the chaos natural in humanity into a future of order and prosperity? Our sacred ancestors knew what we have forgotten, that peace, not war, is our sacred calling, that we were to lead by our example, not to be led by our greed, our hunger for power. I look around, and I am humbled by your acts of valor and sacrifice, but we are no longer a people united by our sacrifice or by our convictions. We are united only in our propensity for self-interest, infighting, and greed. Let us call out our great worry, that it is only our enemy who unites us. But what then when our enemy is vanquished? That is the question that haunts us, is it not? I fling my hand at Dido. That is what the Rim Consul wonders. That is why our dictator withholds our forces. Why we all look past this war, because we know the next one hangs over our heads like the sword of Damocles, restrained by a single thread. I look up at Atlas, and so do many others. If we cannot find common ground today, in 2 years it will not be the rising against the society. It will be the core against the rim, perhaps even sooner than that. No one speaks. It has always been the elephant in the room, the Rim's greatest fear before they enter the war, why they are held hostage by this delay, this obfuscation, this impasse. Diomedes slowly makes his way back to the Rim deputation. Helios and Dido are paying rapt attention, but they are not my audience today. I scour the 200 with angry eyes. Are we so ridiculous to invite another war upon ourselves? Have we forgotten the promise of gold to our people? They cry out for peace, for stability, the rewards for the sacrifice of their liberty. They are due those rewards, for they have sacrificed. If we are too afraid of each other to find common ground, by what logic should they follow us? What hope do we give them? What legacy do we give our children except might makes right? What inheritance do we leave behind except war after war until the flame of mankind shrinks into the uncaring dark? Whether you respect me or revile me, you must admit we face a choice today, not as Rim or Core, but as a people. Do we believe that gold should continue this internal game of self-interest and self-destruction to benefit a few of us? Or do we make the choice that Selenius and Akari would have made? Do we reclaim our moral imperative and choose to work together to remind the billions who look to us for guidance that not only can we lead, but we will lead them into a brighter future? It is a choice too important for one person to make for us all. I turn to Atalantia. If looks could kill, the maggots would already own my flesh. I soften my voice, imbuing it with the respect her campaign deserves. Atalantia, I look at you and see a great general of her people. In our hour of desperation, we appointed you with unprecedented powers. With them, you have led us through our darkest days. Truly, your name will stand beside Akari and Selenius. I sigh, apologetic. Yet I cannot agree with your proposed course of action. Knowing it will sever us from our brothers and sisters in the Rim, knowing it will permit Virginia to devise new schemes for our destruction, knowing that this war will not end with the reconquering of Luna, it will only end with the reconquering of Mars.
I meet the eyes of the 200, one by one, lighting in them the same fire I feel building in me. Horatia is incandescent amidst her reformers. The Falth are stewing. Julia is examining every face in the room. Ajax watches his father above. His hand does not rest on his razor, but the leather thong of his holster is open. Atalantia, you have offered me a gift without equal. The reclamation of my homeland, my family seat. I must be a fool to demur, but I hope I will be mocked as an honourable fool who values the stability of the spheres over my own interests. I cannot accept this gift, not if it comes at the cost of this alliance. I cannot. I will not. My conscience demands better from me than self-interest. My colour demands more from me than silence. Mars must fall. I shouted again. Mars must fall. That is why I urge this sacred body, which represents our greatest minds, warriors, and voices of our people, to exercise its rights and vote to veto the dictator's decision to strike at Luna, and instead favour a resolution to assemble an armada and join our Rim brethren to end this war where it began. Mars. For the first time in my speech, I look dead on at Julia. We have the will to fight our enemy. Let us have the courage, the guts, to trust one another. Only then can we show our enemies, our people, ourselves, that when gold is indivisible, gold is invincible. The silence that follows feels like death. But that is all well and good. The punchline's on its way. And I suppose you would like to lead this campaign against Mars? Atalantia asks. Self-interest be damned indeed. No. No interest in that glory at all? No. Though my heart yearns to prove itself, I am not yet experienced enough to lead such an army as Mars will require. There is only one man amongst us fit for the task. One man who can make Mars tremble with fear and wake the hearts of our fighting men and women. That is why I nominate the greatest field commander of our time. They frown, not sure who could possibly fit that bill. I lift my fingers in the horns of the Minotaur. The action ignites a wildfire of dissent and opprobrium. Julia has to hammer her staff for quiet. Atalantia laughs. Unfortunately, the madman has raised arms against the society. He is cornered by Asmodeus's army. My own ships are 4 days away. When they arrive, they will extinguish House Wrath forever. Your ships will not be needed, I say. I have already made peace. I extend a hand toward Horatia. Au votum. Horatia stands.
As we speak, my brother Cicero leads our fleet toward Venus. They will arrive in 4 hours. In the name of Lysander the Peacemaker, my brother has helped broker a ceasefire between House Carthii and House Wrath. Apollonius will vacate the docks and turn them over to their rightful owners, House Carthii. The deal was struck not 6 hours ago. Atalantia whirls on the Carthii. Cornelius! What is this?
McCarthy stares at her in confusion.
My father would never agree to this.
Horatia holds up a holocube. I have in my possession a message from our Wrath and the head of House Carthii.
Julia motions Horatia down and sends Ajax to collect and deploy the message. Apollonius blooms into the room, 3 times his natural size. Only his hair is groomed. The rest of him is a testament to his frontline heroics. His left arm is broken, his right ear missing, his face covered with burns and shallow lacerations. His eyes glow with triumph. But it is his companion who draws gasps.
Valeria Alcarthiae stands beside Apollonius with a sombre expression and speaks.
Salve, fellow Aureates. No doubt you have watched this battle between our houses with much consternation and fear of the risk to this critical infrastructure. Too much blood has been spilled. I have lost brothers, a sister, legions, and a father in this battle.
Murmurs rise. Her siblings stand in panic.
Yes, a father. I regret to inform you that my great father, Asmodeus, fell yesterday. He died like a peerless, on the field of battle with a mortal wound in his front. With great loss comes reflection. My father's slights against our wrath were not imagined. Indeed, my father betrayed our wrath to the Republic 7 years ago. Though there is a temptation to seek revenge, our loon recalled to me on Mercury the words of Lorne our Arcus. Death begets death begets death. Now is not the time for bloody feuds. Now is the time for unity. Thanks to Lysander and his proxy Cicero, our wrath and I have agreed to terms. My house legions have sworn themselves to me. The dockyards are now under my control. Restoration and production begin tomorrow. Goodman, the hatchet is buried. Good ladies, the feud is done. Our mission is too important. Mars must fall.
Valeria said all that needed to be said with none of her usual flair. It is the perfect tone for the next administrator of the dockyards to strike. Apollonius also has a new tone suitable for this venture. As I requested, he's reduced his grandiloquence.
Gratitude, Avotum. My noble kin, for too long have I been cast from your favour and the fray. My eyes have been fixed on civil enemies, only to forget the wily instigator that set us at each other's throats. This conflagration over Venus was nothing but another device of the devil who plagues us all. Darrow, and his wicked little henchman, too. Barker. It was Darrow who attacked the docks with atomics, as many of you know. It was Darrow who sparked this battle. It is Darrow who has fled me, laughing at the chaos in his wake. No more. You call me madman. You call me black sheep. I care not. My legions board my crafts of war. We sail on Mars to reclaim our homeland. We sail with Votum, with Loon. Join us. For Mars must fall.
Their images shrink back into the hollow cube in Ajax's palm. Horatia thrusts up her fingers in the horns.
Mars must fall.
The reformers surge to their feet and join the chorus. But it's not just them. Apollonius has friends, admirers, and they burst to their feet with the horns uplifted, roaring his name in a battlefield frenzy. I turn to look at Diomedes and raise an eyebrow. Not one member of their deputation has so much as moved. He leans in to whisper into his mother's ear. She smirks, tongues her molars, stands, and lifts her blade. Then so does Helios. As soon as they do, Julia Albellona stands. With a glance for me, she sets her hand on her stomach, smiles, raises her other hand, and makes the horns. Her clients and friends burst to their feet and carry on the chorus until only Atalantia and her block remain seated. The majority is with me, and then some. Atalantia has not moved. With a sigh, she waits for the uproar to die down.
My ears are open, and I hear you, she allows. Your passions have been awoken. If you must forsake prudence to act on them, it is your right. But you understand I cannot abandon the strategy that has brought us to the brink of victory. My own. I will maintain the siege of Luna with my fleet, and I wish you all well on this escapade. For all our sakes, I pray Lysander is as gifted on the field of battle as he is on the speaking floor. Good luck, my friends.
Her eyes twinkle in amusement.
If Luna falls before Mars, perhaps I'll come and join you.
She stands from her chair and strides in my direction. Horatia and a few of her reformers intercept her. Atalantia snaps her fingers and five Olympics rush to her in a moment, including Ajax. Knowing she wouldn't risk a bald-faced assassination of me now, I have the reformers let Atalantia through. Her anger is buried beneath a proud smile.
Truly, my beloved, I didn't think you had it in you. My fault for always believing the best in people.
My mother and father send their tidings, I reply.
Ajax stiffens and turns to look at Atalantia. She does not show any signs of guilt, but whatever he sees on her face makes his eyelids twitch. She's too focused on me to notice.
Atalantia licks her incisors.
Kalindora? Kalindora, I say.
Quite a liar, that one.
She sighs.
I'll send you your new boots. Oranges make fine leather.
Whistling for her Olympics to follow, she heads for the exit, stopping only when she notices that Ajax has not fallen in behind her. She turns back and cocks her head at him. He looks back and forth between us, and then lifts his fingers in the horns. She lets out a small laugh of surprise, mingled with disgust, before turning her gaze on me.
Don't let Glerastes's death haunt you, Lysander. Now that you're in the game, he won't be the last friend you sacrifice.
Atalantia strides out, trailing Olympics and irons. I look over at Ajax and grip his shoulder. He gives me a hard nod, then we both look up to the top of the Colosseum, where Atlas watches us for a moment from his perch, before flying away on his skip boots, as silently as the crows who left before.